Attention, pleasure seekers. What if I told you there was a toy that was so iconic that it practically set the standard for all my favorite products? Allow me to introduce or reintroduce to you the Magic Wand. Dubbed the Cadillac of Vibrators, the Magic Wand is more than just a toy. It's a culture icon, a symbol of power and unapologetic pleasure. I mean, do you know any other toys that have been praised in Time magazine? Didn't think so. With a unique rumble that resonates deep within, the Magic Wand Original is not just a product, it's a trusted confidant. And it's a sure thing. Never had an orgasm? Try a magic wand. Never given your party a full body massage? Try the magic wand. Listen, it's rightfully earned accolades like Vibrator of the Year for decades. I've been so obsessed with my magic wand, I even drilled holes in my bedside table so that she's always next to me in case I need her. Well, that was years ago. Because now there are multiple iterations of the magic wand, allowing you to pick whatever model fits your lifestyle. You can go wireless with the magic wand rechargeable, tiny with the magic wand mini, or micro. Micro's really mini. Or go for variety with the Magic Wand Plush. The best part though, all of them have the same powerful orgasmic rumble that made the original so popular. So if you're ready to make some magic, visit sexwithemily.com/magicwand and discover why the Magic Wand continues to cast a spell on the world. Magic Wand, not just a vibrator, an icon of pleasure. Thanks for listening to Sex with Emily. I'm Dr. Emily, and on today's show, I'm talking about emotional intelligence and how to spot if your date or partner's is high or low. Plus, I answer your sex, dating, and relationship questions. Topics include, what is emotional intelligence and why the heck is it so important? So you want to open up the sex conversation with your husband, but he refuses due to his religious beliefs. Now what? How do you cope when you miss being in a relationship but are too busy with work to even make room for one? And how to love mutual masturbation with your partner just as much as you love sex? All this and more. Thanks for listening.
Look into his eyes. They're the eyes of a man obsessed by sex. Eyes that mock our sacred institutions. Bedroom eyes, they call them in a bygone day.
Hey, Emily. You got a boyfriend?
Because my man E here, he just got his heart broken. He thinks you're kind of cute.
A girl's
got
to have her standards. Oh, my.
Do women know about shrinkage?
Isn't it common knowledge?
What do you mean, like laundry? It shrinks?
Can we not talk about sex so much?
Are you kidding me?
Oh, my God. I feel so good.
Being bad feels pretty good.
But you know, Emily's not the kind of girl you just play with.
You're listening to Sex with Emily. We're talking about sex, relationships, and everything in between. For more information, check out sexwithemily.com. You're going to love our website. So much information there that you need to have the sex life and the relationship that you deserve. Thanks for also subscribing wherever you listen to the podcast. It's available on all platforms and find us on all social media. It's at Sex with Emily across the board. All right, guys, I hope you enjoy the show. There's nothing quite like sinking your teeth into a good sandwich. But listen, carb guilt is real. I'm someone who's very invested in my health, and I like to get my carbs from oats and beans and fruits and not bread. But I love bread. So here's my hack. Thanks to Hero Bread, you can enjoy your favorite bready delights without the carb consequences. Hero Bread has turned those carby, empty-calorie bread products into fluffy, delicious breads that boast 0 to 1 net carbs per serving, 0 grams of sugar, and are packed with loads of fiber and protein. The first time I tried their white bread, I was skeptical. Could it really taste good with such impressive nutritional stats? Well, I'm pleasantly surprised to say it absolutely does. The texture is just phenomenal. It's like this soft, airy, and it just toasts up like a dream. I've whipped up everything from grilled cheese to PB&J and even made enchiladas, wraps, and tacos with their tortillas. Each time, Hero Bread has been a game changer. And here's the kicker. Despite its light texture and great taste, Hero Bread fits perfectly into my health goals. It's been adding more fiber to my diet while keeping the sugar at bay. Whether I'm packing a picnic lunch, planning a road trip snack, which I often do, or prepping French toast for breakfast, Hero Bread is my go-to. So whether you're craving a classic sandwich, a burger, or a hearty bun, or even indulging in a low net carb croissant, Hero Bread is something for everyone. And I highly recommend checking their monthly small batch drops out so you can try goodies like the 1 gram net carb Hero Cheddar Biscuit and so much more. You won't believe what they have. So you ready to kick carb guilt to the curb? Head over to hero.co and snag 10% off your order with the code Emily. That's Emily at hero.co. Oh, all right. Clear signs your date has low emotional intelligence. Now, I saw this and I was like, okay, people who have low emotional intelligence, this might not resonate with them. They'll be like, I don't know. I don't even know what emotional intelligence is. But you guys, listen, it's a, you know, here's the thing on emotional intelligence. You have depth. You know how to respond to things. You have healthy relationships. You have the capacity to handle relationships. You have emotions. You express them effectively. And I guess if you're not that person, you are, you know, more emotionally immature. And maybe you act like a child a lot. But I like some of these points because I thought whether you're emotionally intelligent or not, or if you're dating someone who isn't, this will help you out. So one sign is they always bring the focus of the conversation back to them. Now, I think we all know this is a huge red flag when people dominate the conversation. And no matter what you say, you're like, when I was on my vacation in Italy, they're like, oh, I went to Italy. And then they go off and you're like, what? It can be very unrelated. Like my boss today. And they're like, well, let me tell you about my boss. And you're like, oh my God. However, here's a twist to that. We all know that's just annoying. And sometimes we can give people slack. Like if it's a first date, we might say, oh, well, they were nervous. Mm-hmm. But typically, I think this is just maturity. You know, you give and take. Hopefully you do it with your friends and your family. But the more sophisticated kind of bringing the conversation back to them is someone who listens intently. They ask questions and then they, of course, share their own experiences. And then they demonstrate common ground to show empathy. However, this person will also have the last word and maybe say my situation was a lot better or a lot worse. So look out for those people because it's still always about them. The other thing is they're transactional. Now, this is a good one. So one thing that I was always taught was look how they treat the waiter. Mm-hmm. Look how they treat the wait staff. If they're rude to the waiter, they're going to be rude to you. If they hate their mother, they're not going to be great to you. But someone could be really nice to the waiter. They could really, you know, give their extra food to the homeless person. But you need to find out why they are doing these acts. So even if they're really, okay, let's say they're excessively charming. Mm-hmm. Why are they being charming? If they say to you like, oh, I'm only doing this. I'm only being nice to the waitstaff. So next time we're here, they'll be nice to us. Like then you know they have an ulterior motive. And if they have an ulterior motive, that means that everything they do, and this is very typical of like narcissistic personality disorders, like people who only do things to look good. Like they're the ones who like keep talking about all the donations they gave or all the great things they did for the community or what a good parent they are. What, you know what I mean? Like you can just tell.
Yeah, like kindness with a motive.
Kind of with a motive is no real motive at all. Okay. Another one is they can't keep commitments. The ability to instantly communicate with someone thanks to smartphones means it is easier to flake. And people can flake. Something could happen. They have nerves or they're upset about something. But if it's last minute, that could mean that they're lacking emotional intelligence. They might not have a strong enough sense of self to decline invitations in the first place. Or they don't have the empathy to know that it's friggin' rude. That you have, we all have time. We all have enough, we all are people and humans, and we all make decisions about how we're going to spend our time. So if someone flakes on you, that just to me is just not, like literally flakes, like meet me here at 7 and they don't show up. I think that's what they're talking about.
Yeah. Or just like they're texting you right beforehand. Like, oh crap. Like I can't make it. Like the first time, I think depending on the excuse, it can be a pass. But to me, that's just like you literally have no consideration for my time right. At all.
Right. It's super rude.
I hate, that's the thing I hate the most. My biggest pet peeve is feeling like someone doesn't give a crap about my time, that I'm wasting my time waiting for someone and they know that.
Right.
I agree. Hate it so much.
I think the amount of flaking that we experience is a very American thing. Because I've had plans with people from Europe and dates like or other parts of the world. There was one instance where I like double checked with him. I was like, hey, we still going out tomorrow or tonight at 8? And he's like, yeah, why wouldn't we be?
Right.
So it was like, I think it's kind of like a...
And California especially.
Developed.
Oh, and Los Angeles.
Los Angeles.
Yeah. Yeah, we are. And I think it's true. Okay, here's a huge one, you guys. This is huge. Signs that someone you're with dating is not doesn't have a lot of emotional intelligence. They have no real friendships. And this to me, oh, you only make that mistake once. I dated some guy who had no friends. He literally had no friends. I kept saying, well, what about this? Do you have any friends from childhood or high school? Nothing. So someone who has low emotional intelligence might be like, I have few or no friends. They might give reasons like they're new to the city or their friends abandoned them or they're always blaming others for character flaws. Guess what, you guys? This person does not have the emotional intelligence you need. Having long-term friendships are really, really important and they're really a sign of emotional maturity. Like even other friends who don't have friends. It's like...
I always think that's weird.
It's weird. I mean... especially coming from someone who's like, my friends are like my family. You know, I've built a world around that. It's like, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's because you always have to think about why this person doesn't have any friends, because it's like, is it because they aren't putting themselves out there, or is it because they're not a good friend and every friend they've had has abandoned them because they're like, dude, no.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, it's one thing to be an introvert and have like, even if they have a few good friends, like five great friends, it's not about quantity.
One really good friend.
Yeah.
Just one. You got a best friend?
Great. But like no friends, not good. They must win the argument at all costs. Oh, this is a tough one. This is tough just to be friends with someone, to have someone in your family like this. But, you know, if you're uncomfortable having doubt in our perspectives, even though it's normal, it's a clear sign of low EQ, it might be understandable. If a person only exhibits such tendencies in one or two topics they feel strongly about, it's fine. But if they have to win every single argument, every single one, at all costs, it's a red flag. It really is a red flag. Because they just can't stand someone to have a divergent perspective on them. It makes them feel inferior. And so they always have to one-up you and say they're right. Ugh, makes me, just thinking about people in my life that I've known like this makes me crazy. They're always right.
Those people who it's not even an argument and they make it into an argument just so that they can be right.
Yep, they're using that for their own, confidence booster, which isn't real. Okay, this is huge, you guys. They criticize everyone but themselves.
Oh, that's the big one.
Oh my God, you guys. Do you have someone in your life like this? They literally criticize everybody. They're talking about how everyone else has massive character flaws without self-awareness, and they clearly lack emotional intelligence, because if you're good with emotions, you can see yourself clearly and you also can see others with empathy. But if you're blaming the entire world, this person was wrong and this person's an idiot and this person is a jerk, and they never look at themselves, I just think that this is a huge flag. Like, even if they can admit their faults, it might be like something cosmetic or something. Well, I guess sometimes, you know, they do like this kind of faux admitting their faults. Mm. Like, well, I've had times in my life where I've struggled, but, you know, like it's nothing very specific. It might even be more superficial.
Yeah, like it's their flaws and they're commenting on it, but it wasn't their fault they had that flaw.
Right.
Like they were like, oh, well, yeah, well, I did this, but it was because this situation happened. So obviously this was going to happen.
Exactly. They have a justification for everything they do. That is just, I've dated people. Oh God, I've done it all. And it was such a sign. And he was so not emotionally intelligent. He was brilliant, but he wasn't emotionally. That's very different, you guys.
Yeah. Can you make that distinction?
Okay. He was so friggin' smart. Ivy League school. We all looked up to him. He was just like, so seductive in many ways, in the sense of like he knew what he was doing and he was a take charge and he was very generous and he was very kind, like in many ways. However, he was always criticizing other people, and he was a negative person, but he literally, it took me like 6 months in to realize like he's never once ever once talked about something about himself that was sort of self-effacing or self-deprecating or like, yeah, there was a struggle in my life. Like everything was good. Everything. But everyone else, he was like obsessed with everyone else's problems, but so smart. Mm-hmm. So I think that it's very, we can be, and I love smart. Like I love people who know things and they're teaching me things, but like, and also it took me a while to realize like he was so confident. He was so confident. That was super sexy. But then the fact that he could not see himself and never had any problems or mistakes or could see any of his flaws were a problem.
If you were that intelligent, do you think you have the capacity of holding spaces for both?
Yeah.
Levels of
you have to work on it. I mean, he is kind of like genius level, and there are some people who are just so smart and that gets them by because they're like, I am smart. I can do anything. I can take over the world. I don't need to make space for emotional intelligence. But I think you see cases of people who actually can develop both. And you guys, you can develop this. It takes work, takes therapy, like really good therapy, but you can actually learn to round yourself out and to be like, I know I'm smart, but I realize I have some, you know, empathy to learn. The other thing is they dispense unsolicited advice and opinions.
Mm.
Yeah. So this person, like, They just want to call you out on everything. It's negative. They want to express their thoughts about your life. And that seems way more important than even paying any attention to your feelings or what you're going through. And it might seem like they're attuned to your problems. Like, you know, but like how you're feeling, but really they're not, they realize that like they can't accept when you're not open to their advice. And you remember that sometimes we don't want people's advice. Sometimes we just want people to listen. So Let's see, this is New York Times bestselling author Robert Greene's advice to see the world for what it is. It means accept human nature for what it is. There's people who will get along and people we won't. There's people we'll get along with and people we won't. And if we come across the latter, we see every interaction as intel on what you want in your life and how you can become a better and wiser person. And people like this who have any of these traits are just, I don't know, they don't serve me at all. And hopefully they don't, you realize maybe this has been a light bulb moment for some people. I hope so. Because all these things are dangerous.
I used to do some of these things back. Yeah? Like when I was younger, I used to do some of these things because I did lack emotional maturity. I feel like I have found some, and I do know when I am being slightly immature about something, I'm actually aware of it and I'm just kind of like, whatever. So I feel like that's also in a sense, a kind of a sign of thing.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, I think a lot of people, especially the unsolicited advice, I used to just always, I feel like, well, you're talking to me about it, so you obviously want help.
Right.
But I've realized in the last couple of years, especially, it's like, you know what? I'm just going to be like, oh, I'm sorry. That sucks. You're so right.
Mm-hmm. That's what you kind of do. You're like, I'm really sorry you're going through that. That sounds really, really tough. I'm here for you.
Yeah.
And that's really what you have to do, even especially if you're in a relationship, you guys. Like, and this is, we typically hear this from male females, like women being like, I just want him to listen. But sometimes we don't want your advice. We just want you to like empathize and say like, that sounds really tough. But I go into fix it mode all the time. I mean,
it's your job.
It's my job. Even on this date, I was like all of a sudden giving him, I'm like, I know you're not asking for advice. And I was like, boom, boom, all this advice. I can't help it. So it's really great. And if you catch yourself, you could say, wait a minute, are you looking for advice right now? Or you told me to listen. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a great way to kind of backward. Like, I'm sorry, I'm giving you advice. But if you need to listen, I think people will be happy to tell you
sometimes,
what they need.
Yeah, that's what I say. I was like, I don't really need any advice right now, but I just need someone to listen. I just say that before I even start talking about what it is I need to talk about.
I think we could all remember that. All right, guys. So if you're in these emotionally unintelligent relationships, you might want to get yourself out.
I never realized it until you said it, but kindness with a motive. I dated this guy. We were at a concert and somebody tripped and fell. And I was like, and he stopped to like help them. And I was like, oh, that was so nice of him. Later on, I found out he was an accident lawyer. So like he was trying to get business out of it, but I didn't. He said he was a lawyer, but I didn't know what kind, and so I thought he was so nice.
Did he get his card? And
oh yeah, he gave him his card, and then I was like, what?
Ambulance chaser on the sidewalks. That's crazy. Yep, yeah. That is such a good example.
Didn't realize it was a thing though until you guys just said it.
Yeah.
Now,
oh, it is a thing.
It's all clicking.
Yeah, like they're always nice to people. Like they're always like chatting people up at the head of the restaurant or the head of the whatever. And it's all just, but you see that they're not nice. He didn't talk to anyone else that at the concert or whatever. Nope. Wow. Did you go out with him again after that?
One other time. Yeah. Until I realized all this and it clicked. But I never put words to it until you just talked about it. And then I'm like, whoa, I totally had that happen.
You might have
to
said, yeah, that's crazy. Yep. I know those people. Yeah. That's just, they're just, you can just tell they're doing things for their own motives.
Yeah. But I mean,
what?
No, I mean, that's very interesting. I was just trying to think like,
what other examples?
I mean, cause I was trying to think, I was like, cause there are times though, when you just see an opportunity and you're like, oh, okay. Like I am a genuine person, but also I'm also going to shoot my shot at that same moment in the sense of like, not particularly with this guy. He's an accident lawyer. He probably was just really trying to give him the guy the card. But maybe he was like, oh, the guy tripped. I am going to help him up because he was right in front of me. But why not also give him my card because I could help him if he's seriously injured or wants to make some money. Like, I'm just saying that sometimes you could be genuine, but also see it as an opportunity.
True. But I guess we'd have to ask Kristen, was he kind to anybody else?
Yeah, like, that's the thing.
Asking people how they're doing. No, yeah. Was he empathetic? Like, this is the thing. It's when it's a good point.
That's why I didn't realize it.
But when
there's
an absence, but there's now going back, you're like, oh yeah, he wasn't that kind and he wasn't that nice, but it was like this weird anomaly, but he was so nice to the random dude that fell down because it could bring him money. It could bring him business. It could bring him something. Maybe it could bring someone fame.
Yeah, like excessively nice, not just let me help you up. Nice.
Yeah, like here's my card. Call me.
He extends his hand with the business card already in it, just like, hey, let me help you up. Oh, yes, this card.
I'm glad you went out with him twice. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to get into your questions.
We have Lisa, 47 in Ohio, who's got a question about sharing toys.
Hey, Lisa. Thanks for calling. Hello. Hi.
Hi, Emily. How are you?
Well, I'm good, Lisa. I'm so glad you called.
I'm so excited. I'm so excited that I got through. I've been waiting on you guys to talk about this topic for so long.
Well, here we are.
So I have a question and a dilemma slash, I guess they're both questions. So what do you do when your partner is the source of your guilt about sex?
What do you do when your partner is the source of your guilt? Can you describe more about the guilt? What your partner is saying to you or doing? Yeah.
So I've been married for 21 years, and we both grew up in the church. And in our religion, quote unquote, sex is not really talked about. It's not really dealt with. And it definitely isn't something that women are encouraged to enjoy.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So when I got with my partner, he had all these ideals about what sex should and should not be. And you shouldn't touch yourself, and you shouldn't watch porn, and you shouldn't use toys, and you shouldn't do all of these things.
Mm-hmm.
And so my question was, like, well, if I can't explore these things with my partner, who I've now married, who and what do I explore these things with?
Right.
So, and so that leads me into I want to give you all the information.
Yeah.
So fast forward to a few years back, my husband discovers that he has erectile dysfunction.
Okay.
But he didn't tell me. So he just started withdrawing from me. And so in my effort to, you know, kind of spice things up and make sure, you know, he didn't feel bad for not being able to perform, I purchased a toy. And it was a gift. I presented it as a gift to him. It was a one of the vibrators that you control with an app.
Oh, great. We love those. Okay.
Yeah. Well, so you would think. Mm-hmm. But I presented it to him. And he was offended. So that's why I thought about it in your last segment, because you talked about men feeling like they're being replaced by the toy, but he was offended.
He was offended. You guys have been together a long time, and you have to remember these are old messages. So first, tackle the what do you do when it comes from the religion. I mean, what I often tell people is to you know, we go through different stages in our life, right? It's also okay for him to look at that and say, and anyone who's still holding on to things that might not serve them anymore, well, this is a belief I had. But where did it come from, and does it still serve me right now? And maybe the weight of knowing that, like, he actually could have pleasure with you and figure out a way to make it really sexy and hot again would allow him to say, you know what, I understand these things about the church, but I love my wife, I love Lisa, I care about her so much, and if there's ways that we could bridge this gap, I can just take what I like from our religion and kind of leave the rest for now. But he probably didn't understand it, because you guys have been together for a long time and it's never been talked about, never been challenged. So it was probably the way it was presented, not your fault at all, Lisa. But this is going to take a little bit of unpacking, and we can kind of help you finesse this conversation too.
Well, we have so much messaging culturally about what is sex and what that means and who, how we have it, that orgasm's the goal. And that it's penis and vagina, and that's sex. And I think that one of the things that we have found with people with erectile dysfunction, or, you know, varying degrees of not being able to stay hard as long, et cetera, is that, again, it's unraveling all of that messaging and saying, but doesn't this feel good? I know that you're not hard and that you're not able to, we're not able to have the sex we used to have, but honestly, we can't have the sex we used to have as we get older.
Right.
Those hips, they kind of hurt. Like, we can't be, we're not maybe as flexible as we once were.
Right.
Some of the things change in our body, and maybe things are different and maybe they're better, but it's still the connection. And I think that's going to be what you and your husband are going to have to kind of talk about. And it's really going to start with communication, because sometimes when you buy a product and you're like, look, this is for us, it can be really shocking and maybe upsetting, because he's like, oh, I can't. It reminds him, right?
That he can no longer. And for many, you know, when something's not working, especially their penis, men feel very emasculated. They can feel very much like they're no longer a man. right? Yeah. And if my penis doesn't work, then it's all over. And again, a lot of this is just, you know, in his mind, but he's not really like able to say that. So then he attacks you or feels, makes you feel bad about it, Lisa, which I'm sure he, you know, doesn't want to do that. So I think that maybe having a conversation again outside the bedroom where you're like, you know what, I understand that I brought that in, that might have been jarring to you, but I really think what's most important here for the sanctity of our marriage is really keeping up our intimacy, and it's not just about sex. And so maybe we could try some things. And a great product for this, well, you said you bought him something with a remote.
Yes, it's control. You download the app. Mm-hmm. And you control it with your phone.
Probably a week and a half. Yeah.
So he
yeah.
literally had to do no work but push a button.
Right. And this was for you, the toy.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Well, it's a vibrator, but he controls all of it.
Yeah. I love that. I mean, there are some great toys like that, but what we're thinking is perhaps...
Well, we were thinking about maybe the Pulse from Hot Octopus, that this is a product that has this... pulsating, it's a pulse plate is what it's called, and it gives a really specific and really intense sensation to the frenulum on the penis. And this can be a product that he inserts himself into when he's like soft, and he may never get erect, but he could have an orgasm, and it's going to feel really, really good. The other thing, and the other thing I would say is it could have been that it was hard for him to have you do this alone when your intimacy is something that has been between the two of you for 21 years. And so it could be that after you reintroduce the conversation and the notion of involving products and toys into your bedroom play, that you go on a date and you go shopping together. And whether that's at some place near, you know, where you live, or if it's online, that you're looking at products, you're reading, and that can actually be really exciting. That can be reigniting some of that excitement about how much, you know, you enjoyed being physical together.
Yeah.
We've actually done that, but they just end up in the drawer, in the pile with everything else that we bought throughout the
day. Right. No, I understand, Lisa. This just sounds to me like it is. People can be very, very set in their ways. And so if it's something that he, because Lisa, you have absolute all the right to pleasure that you've had for your marriage and for your lifetime. So really getting him on board, you know your husband better than I do. But there's got to be ways in your 21 years of marriage that you've been able to find common ground on things. Maybe it was deciding where you're going to go on vacation or when you're going to buy a house. But you know how you can communicate with him. And this is something that's a little bit trickier. But I don't want you to give up on this, Lisa, because it is really important for intimacy, because then you're going to start, resentments will build. It sounds like you might already be there. He wasn't telling you about the erectile dysfunction. So just know that, you know, the more you talk about it in a way that's like using your feeling words, I really feel more connected to you when we are using things together and we can both have pleasure. And it's really just having him come around. Remember, it's been his lifetime of other messages. Mm-hmm. So rewiring can be tricky, but I feel like you can do it, Lisa. I feel like you just got to keep seeing what works and let him know how important it is to you and that you want him to have pleasure as well. Okay, Lisa?
Thank you.
You're so welcome, Lisa. Thanks for calling in and sharing your story. We appreciate it.
All right. So we have Jewel, who is 22 from Georgia, and she needs tips on how to masturbate with her partner.
Okay. Hey, Jules. Jewel.
Mm-hmm. Hey.
Hi. Hi. Thanks for calling.
Yeah. Thank you for taking my call.
Of course.
Yeah, I'm 22 and I have the best partner in the whole world. Our sex life is amazing. We've actually just really recently gotten into this podcast and had like, that was amazing.
Oh, I'm so glad. Oh, my podcast?
We talk a lot about mutual masturbation.
Right.
What is it?
You got into my podcast listening.
Yeah.
Oh, awesome. A lot of couples do that.
We actually have been like listening together and reporting back. It's super fun.
Oh, it's like a book club, but a podcast sex club. I love it. Okay. I love that.
Yeah, exactly. And so, but I've always been a little embarrassed, really embarrassed to masturbate with him. There's like an anxiety, like a mental block, and I just didn't know, because that sounds so great, and I know you really preach it. Like, do you have any tips for making that a little bit easier or a little bit more comfortable or not being so anxious about that one thing?
Huh, yeah. I mean, would it be more interesting to you if maybe he would, which part of it makes you anxious? Like him looking at you, like what you do, like, do you think what you do is weird or like, or does it just seem wrong, like taboo, or what's going on in your head?
So it's not so much a taboo. I've always been a little insecure about my body, and so I think it probably comes a little bit from that. but it is very much his scrutiny is kind of intimidating.
His scrutiny?
I feel like I want to shrink a little bit.
You feel like you're on a what a little bit? A string? You're going to shrink a little bit.
I'm sorry, give me.
Oh. You feel like you're going to shrink.
Here, let me try this.
She's going to shrink.
Yeah, so his scrutiny, you know, his that kind of intense attention from him, I feel like I just want to shrink a little bit.
Oh, okay. Has he ever said anything to you before, like, that made you feel less than? Or is he very supportive and loving about your...
He's extremely supportive and loving. I have had partners, though, that were not that way.
Okay, yeah. Well, I'm glad you're not with them anymore.
He is definitely not the problem.
Good. So he loves you. He loves your body. He tells you how sexy you are and stuff. I mean, I would say that one of the things is, I mean, because you're having sex with him, so he is seeing you naked all the time, but you feel like... it's really intense if he's just there staring at you. But here's the thing about mutual masturbation is that it could go really slow. Like first off, you could practice doing it at home in front of the mirror, like in yourself in front of the mirror, like when you're at home. Like you could do it with your, just to see how it looks and how you like look, like kind of like masturbation with yourself, but looking at it and seeing how really fucking beautiful it is and how cool it is that you can get yourself off and you know your body. It really is. I know people like, I'm glad you, like, it's really hot that we see what our bodies can do. So that might make you feel, you know, feel more confident in it. The other thing is, like, I would say is that, first of all, no pressure to do it, but also think about, like, would it be more comfortable if maybe... I'm trying to think if he started, then you started, but I think you could leave some of your clothes on. You could have him slowly undress you. You could, you know, have some candles lit. Like, I feel like it's the kind of thing, once you start doing it, it's going to get easier. But I feel like the fear you have around it right now is bigger. Like, when you're actually doing it, you're going to be into the moment. So, like, my tips would be to maybe put on the back burner for a little bit if it's really making you anxious, or also just kind of go slow, or maybe you do it for a few minutes. Maybe just he starts one day and then you do it the next day. Or maybe you say, let's just start with you and I'll see how I feel. And then maybe he could start rubbing you over your pants. So maybe this is how it should work. I got this down. So maybe it's kind of like, you know, when we first start dating people and it's really hot and we're like, it's like dry humping and it's getting really hot and heavy. So rather than making it like right now, we pull down our pants and we masturbate. Maybe it's more organic where you guys are like making out and like you're slowly taking it, you're grinding on each other. And then, you know, he takes his pants off and he takes yours off slowly. And then you like kind of work into it that way. You're already aroused. You're already turned on. And it's like right before maybe you have sex and you just do it for a few minutes and see how it feels. Like maybe your toys out or your lube, or however you masturbate. And then it doesn't become this whole like awkward thing, you know, or maybe you even just decide in the moment, like you don't even have to tell him this, but like next time you guys are fooling around, you could be like, wait a minute, let's do that thing if you're feeling it. So it doesn't be like, okay, ta-da, here I am. Cause you get naked every time you have sex anyway.
Oh yeah. No, thank you. That's really excellent. And I'm so glad I called because that's really helpful.
Oh, I'm so glad.
He's just the most fantastic person.
Oh, Julie, sounds amazing.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, you're so welcome. Just try it that way. Don't make it a big deal and then be like, oops, look who we are. Mutually masturbating. Look what happens. Thanks, Jewel. Thanks for calling. It's true. We sometimes put a lot of pressure on ourselves. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, we have a Leo, 25, from Canada, who has a question about dating.
Okay. Hey, Leo. How can I help you?
Hi. How are you guys today?
Good.
See, I'm really confused because I work a lot. I'm talking like 15, 16 hours a day. And I feel like I don't have time for a relationship, but it's something that I'm missing in my life. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I know that I'm missing it, but I'm not doing anything about it. And I just want to know, like, I don't know how to put it into words, but if you were dating someone who worked 15, 16 hours a day, like, I don't know. I don't know how to go about it.
Well, is this like is this something that you'll be doing for the rest of your life? Or is it just this phase you're in right now, working 15, 16 hours a day?
It's mostly like this. Like, whenever I'm not busy, I keep busy. You know
well,
what I mean? Like, I don't like to have...
Right. Well, what do you do, Leo?
I'm a construction worker. I run my own company.
Right. Okay. So you're a business owner and you're doing construction. I would say that maybe, so you're saying, would that be a turnoff to somebody? Or are you saying you have no time to meet someone?
Yeah. Like, would they lose interest over time? Like, all I can basically do for now is like call on the phone like, she could come live with me, blah, blah, blah. But, like, I don't know. I haven't been home for, like, 2 weeks. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
How is she going to be in 2 weeks? Will she... Well, I don't... This is kind of a weird thing to say, but will she cheat on me? Like, am I going to be betrayed?
Well, I don't know, Leo. You're 25 years old. So, me, like, that's a lot of... I mean, I'm trying to think. What is your... Every day, 15... I mean, I guess I've gone through that. In my 20s, I worked that much. I used to work, like, 12 to 15-hour days. But I still would go out at night and go out on the weekends and meet my friends. I used to work in, like, on political campaigns. It was, like, 24-7. So I was, like, I worked really hard, but I also had a lot of friends and I had a full life. So I feel like the way you're thinking about it is narrow. And maybe you said, yeah, and also the other thing here is that you always keep really busy. And I'm wondering, have you done that? Like, I think there's still some work for you to do, Leo, is like growing into being a man and realizing like it's okay to be alone and feeling your feelings and you don't have to always keep busy. Like, what happens if you slow down? What happens if you make time for friends? Like, do you have to be working this hard, or is working this hard so you can be safe from having to actually feel?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I had a daughter when I was 16, so I just want the best life for her, and I want to focus more on her than myself, but, like, I want to be happy. I don't know. Like, it's hard to explain.
No, I totally get it, Leo. So you had a daughter at a really young age, and so therefore you're like, oh, shit, I got to work. I got to get my act together, and I want to be a good dad. And so for 9 years, you've been running to, like, be that dad and to be that person and to be responsible. So it kind of sounds like you lost a lot of your youth then, too. You know, you had to grow up fast.
Yeah. I just want her to have everything I didn't have. And
of course, honey.
I don't know if I'm being, like, bad by not introducing her to someone that she can call mom, but...
Well, I feel like... I don't feel like you should put so much pressure on yourself right now. I feel like you're doing... Are you happy? Are you, like, enjoying your work? Are you good? Are you fulfilled?
Yeah, honestly, I am. I love keeping busy, like... Just, I don't have time to think, which I like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I think that, again, no, I get it. At 25, I was the same exact way. I was just keeping really busy because I had a lot of stuff to keep busy from, too. There was things I didn't want to think about or feel. And I was super busy and I was really good at my job. But eventually I realized that, like, it was just way too much. And I got really burnt out and I took a year off and traveled and I figured out who I was. And it's always a journey. But I feel like there has to be a part of you that gives yourself a little bit of space and time to be you in your 20s and have some fun and meet some people in a normal way. So I think the scenario that we're talking about is making me realize that, like, sure, you can meet someone who'd be down for anything, but I don't think you're going to be down for this lifestyle. And how are you being a great dad to your daughter if you are always busy? I'm not concerned about her having another mom. I'm concerned about you being present and then learning to process your emotions and your feelings around things. Listen, most people don't do any of this work. So I'm just throwing a lot out there, but it would be really good for you to, like, kind of look at the busyness and see, what am I running from? It's serving you in some way. And I didn't understand that until, like, years later. So for me, I just didn't want to feel. I just wanted to work. So that's what I'm hearing here, Leo. You sound like a really great guy, and I just want you to go easy on yourself and maybe have more of a, you know, just go out with your friends a few times a week. Like, what's going to happen if you don't show up for work? Maybe it's time to start delegating if you're successful in business. A lot of entrepreneurs have a really hard time giving up, you know, delegating. And so that's something I also had to learn so I could have a life back. Mm-hmm. Okay, bye, Leo.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. But I think it still goes back to you. Making yourself a hole before you...
Make yourself a hole before
go
you
out
worry.
There.
Like, he's just, like, worried that he's not. But yeah. He doesn't want to yet. Don't work. Make all your money. Keep working, but don't... You know,
yeah.
Stress on it.
All right. Well, to switch up the subject a little bit, we got Chris, 29, from New York, and him and his wife have some questions about sex toys.
Okay. Hey, Chris. Thanks for calling. You've come to the right place.
Hey, Emily. How are you? It's actually a first time listener today. Thanks for taking our call.
Of course. Welcome to the show.
I appreciate it. So we recently started incorporating toys about, I don't know, a month or two ago.
Cool.
And it's been going really well so far. We kind of went all in. We got a ton of stuff. And then we ended up getting the magic wand last week, which is pretty unbelievable.
Oh, my God, yeah.
But you know, she's actually pregnant. So we were kind of, you know, want to take it easy, but like we were kind of looking for the best toy that we can incorporate together as a couple.
Okay. So
I'm not really sure what that is.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. Okay. So the traditional couple toys are something that you could share during intercourse, right? So a cock ring or like the WeVibe Sync. The WeVibe makes these toys that are like it's a wearable vibrator. It's kind of like a C, so she could wear it inside of her. Like it kind of clips on. Your penis can still go inside. It hits her G spot and her clitoris. So that's like a one she could wear. Now, if and then the cock ring you'd wear on your penis, and then she'd be able to like ride you, and it would hit her clitoris and be amazing. There's also the Moxie, which is amazing new toy that blows my friggin' mind. It's a wearable vibrator that she could wear when she, you guys are like out and about. It's kind of like foreplay, but it's also a great vibrator. But you can control it with an app. So really my question for you, though, is as far as couples toys, is it for intercourse or is it more like she needs more clitoral stimulation during sex? So because you could just get, like actually any of those would work for that as well.
Well, I don't know. We both enjoyed. I mean, obviously, I think she enjoys it more with a toy. I mean, I'm not going to lie about that.
Yeah, but, toys are fun.
I think it's fun to me too. I mean, it's a turn on for both.
Yeah.
Of us. So we both like it, and we've we kind of made a pact to have sex once a day. You know, going
good.
Forward for the rest of our lives. So we actually have an app, and we not that we monitor it, but we do monitor it. We're up to like, I don't know, 40 times.
Oh my God, I love it. How is that changing? How does that feel?
It's good. On the 4th of July, we were at 7, so that's our highest number. So that's good, but I don't know.
This is cool. She's in the car. No, I would just say use some lube. I mean, here's the other thing. Toys are really fun. Like, I like the sink because you could also can use a phone with it and control it. I like the pivot. It's a cock ring, and it's also by WeVibe. I like, what else do we like for couples here that is a good couples toy?
The Pulse 3.
The Pulse, yeah.
Well, yeah, even with that, like we bought the, what was it called? Oh, the magic wand. So we got the wand, and she's been going a little wild with that.
The magic wand is epic, but it's a little, can be harder for couples play. That's why I think even just a little clitoral vibe is great too. So you could try something like, I don't know, gosh, anything by WeVibe is amazing. Like you could get the little Tango Bullet. It's waterproof. But I would try the sink, or I would try the pivot because it's a cock ring and it can also be used as a clitoral vibe. Those are my recommendations for you. We'll put them in the show notes, okay? Thanks for calling. So glad you found the show. All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening and supporting the show, sharing it with a friend. Come on. We all need sex information, don't we? And thanks to my amazing team, Ken, Kristen, Heather, Elisa, Michelle, producer Jamie, and Michael. Was it good for you? Email me, feedback@sexwithemily.com.